letting an out-breath or two be a little longer, if you like. Just slightly, or kind of digging deep. Feeling gravity. Maybe with the out-breath, feeling gravity and the sense of the out-breath traveling down the front of the body, flowing down into the ground, if you like. Allowing some of the energy in the outer muscles of the head, face, and front body to become more slippery and flow down with the out-breath towards the earth, if you like. What happens with the in-breath in between gravity and out-breath? For a while, if you like, really enjoying a sense of how the body naturally does let go with the out-breath. And sort of by the way, with just a little curiosity, the back of the mind, how is the in-breath? Without even quite putting attention to it. A little curiosity, how is the in-breath? And if you like, a long out-breath or a sense or sensing gravity as you breathe out. As if you could kind of let the back of your body be a little interested in the in-breath coming in and filling you up, but not much interested. Allowing thoughts to flow out with the out-breath. Too far to reach. And getting a sense of how this is your retreat, your mysterious body and life. Not someone else's retreat or mysterious life. How How wonderful if it could be in a childlike way. Some interest in not knowing what happens next or where things might go. And when you feel a sense of should, things should go that way. Maybe feeling if that's heavy or fast or how is it in your body to think that thought, to believe that pushiness, that things should go that way. What do we know? And perhaps the lightness or the ground of knowing we do not know. We do not know much. And the openness, maybe lightness, of not knowing much. Is there a kind of childlike position or a place in you that appreciates the openness? Of not knowing what comes next. Of letting the thoughts about what comes next just be thoughts, not true. And what is left? Gravity falling into place. The closeness of body and ground. A wide back, perhaps. Sometimes falling into place, enjoying how gravity holds you. You don't have to hold on to the earth. The earth holds on to you. Sometimes we can invite a sense of not just this physical back taking up more space, longer and wider and fluffier, more like a pillow or a cloud. But we can sometimes invite a sense of something about the back that spreads out to the sides, to infinity, almost. So even if you're sitting up or not lying on your back, as if lying on your back on a towel on the sand, and the back and the towel out to the sides and then the sand. And gravity. Maybe as if some of the places in the head soften and get slippery, maybe a little liquidy, and find a different alignment. Maybe the eyes, something about the eyes falling towards the center of the head, or even further back. Maybe the back of the mouth and tongue also resting back. Maybe even the brain, some of the energy around the outside and front of the brain could just kind of become liquidy, come more towards the middle, and just be less important for a while. Maybe enjoying movements of the breath in the places that are in contact with the ground for a while, if you like. Being so heavy. Even thoughts are so heavy. And letting them be heavy. As if a spring, a mayan, would start to withdraw back into a deep underground pool, all of our outer activities in the brain and muscles and skin. Could kind of melt and come back in through a stem into a deep pool inside, underground. And feeling where is good for you. To kind of land sweetly home in yourself, in your inner being. If that's a place in your body, maybe the lower belly or back, wherever is good for you. If you're not sure, then maybe somewhere comfortable or good, easy enough to feel. Or the lower belly. Not trying to find the place with your eyes or your thinking. Letting the eyes and thinking give in to gravity for a while. Not trying to find a place through talking to yourself inside yourself. Letting the tongue and mouth and throat also give in to gravity. For a while. And a discovery, kind of like bread rising, that the body feels. Sensations exist, sensations are. Choosing your place with the heart. What is more light or joyful or home-like? Or good, good enough, okay. And then helping yourself arrive there is a little bit pushy, just a little bit. Helping yourself arrive in the place you choose, or something in you chooses, good enough. Lower belly, maybe. And then shifting to receptivity. So we slightly push our way to get somewhere, to get there, to that place. And then we become like a bowl, simply receiving what's happening already, in its freshness. And to invite softness, to leave room for another power. To invite release in the eyes, mouth, throat, chest, shoulders, to leave room for another kind of doing and another kind of person who is already here. Another kind of presence. Going against the gravity of our outgoing habits. By doing less pushiness and just to nestle in like a child against a loving adult into your place. Or if body is not your way, then your chosen way of connecting to aliveness directly. Less of our normal habitual doing is the challenge. Allowing a natural nestling into contact with aliveness is the challenge. Not a challenge for the outer muscles, a challenge of arriving to be available for contact and to receive, to become a bowl. To leave some space where aliveness comes in sensations or sounds or that lived experience of that moment of gratefulness or whatever way is your way. Don't worry about the voices that come that might be hard or harsh. It's not your fault. As if someone has left a television on and it's hard not to look. And it's okay. And it's not all that's here. Noticing thinking as thinking, the video in the mind as video, and that's not all that's here. Letting your lower belly find you. Embrace your contact. Be itself. When you notice worry, feeling it in the body very briefly, if you like, and letting the lower belly come and find you again. It's already here. gravity falling into place, heavy. Melting. An open space where the sensations or sounds arrive and pass and arrive and pass and arrive. Not counting each one, letting it flow. Your own mysterious experience just now. Being the bowl. Full of space, spaciousness, full of aliveness. May there be peace, inner and outer. Is there any question or anything to share? Was I loud enough? In the back? Could you hear me? In the meditation? Was I loud enough during the meditation? Okay. Thank you. Is that a question? So, two parts. One is referring to the other day I said that things still get done when we're not trying to get stuff or get somewhere. And the second part is, what is my vision of or for the fully rested person? Or is there such a thing? Or around there. Is that right? Okay. I'll start with the second one. One of the great things with meditation, including resting into life, is giving up on visions and a trusting of that organic unfolding. And it's also that thing of, in the logistics, we have these guidelines. Look at the notice board, wash your bowl. But inside, we really give and want each person to have their own unique fragrance and unfolding. What is fragrance in Hebrew? Nichoa. And so exactly we wouldn't be able to or even want to predict how it's going to act, what it's going to look like. But it's a kind of thing where if sometimes you feel, after all, I feel more myself. And then after a few more years, like, oh yeah, I feel more myself. And then again, I feel more of myself. Or maybe then you start to feel like, I don't know what myself is, but your friends are like, yeah, there's that fragrance that's been there all along that just radiates. So it's not the scary thing of something big taking over and moving us around. It's something very intrinsic in Hebrew is like built in, already in. Born in Mulan, Mulad, again, intrinsic, okay. So a vision might come to someone in rest that might be some guidance. And that could kind of help us stay in the perfume, in the mulad. Nichoa. The nichoa mulad. Mulad nichoa. So, and then also in the second part, kind of, is there such a thing as a fully rested person? Let's find out. I also find that a little rest goes a long way. When my kids were small and I saw that 20-minute window open up that I could go dive onto my mother-in-law's bed and close the door, I did. And then it was a different mind, different life. Was I fully rested? No way. Was I happy to be in the situation that I was in? Yes. Over my head? Yes. But there is a process that can happen, for example, on retreat, of resting maybe more than you thought possible. And sometimes maybe around yesterday or today, the feeling of I'm getting more tired the more I rest is something that sometimes people feel. And then they say, oh no, that's wrong. And it could be, but I have a theory about it. I think that as we get more rested, a bit rested, we start to feel how tired we are, deeply tired. And what I've noticed is that when people, at least if they report back to me and they rest more, again, more, then there's some shift and they're not feeling more and more tired anymore. They're feeling more energy and they're also looking back on the previous days with a completely different view or vision. So if you're feeling groggy, if you're feeling more tired as you rest more, go with your intuition, please. It's your retreat and your life. But what I have noticed with hundreds of people is that there can be then rested enough that it's a different world, it's a different body, it's a different mind. It's also a different last 2 or 3 days. And they look back. So in the middle of it, people say, I'm sleeping all the time. I'm getting more tired. Nothing is happening. And then we kind of come through the membrane of rested a bit more. And people tell me different things about those same 3 days where supposedly they were sleeping all the time. There were insights in there that were not available because they were still resting. And once they got a bit more rested, oh, it felt like I was sleeping all the time, but actually in between, some important things happened. Some beautiful things happened. Some things that I can now access. I'm available for them. And the first part of the question about getting things done or things getting done, I think it is a worthwhile experiment to give enough rest. And some people might have experienced this already, that if you woke up, you were rested, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, you might have thought, oh no. But what if it's like, oh yeah, what a beautiful time to be awake and rested. And then feel what happens. Let yourself follow your feet. It could be you come to the hall. It could be you go to the tree. It could be you invent a new form of qigong without realizing, or just by moving freely. I don't mean really. We don't need another trademarked deep rest gong or whatever. In my opinion. It's an experiment. I think many times, instead of making the experiment, could things actually get done from another way and place, we, from fear, we take our assumption that it's not possible, because we see ourselves hardly getting half of it done when pushing ourselves really hard. So we assume, if I'm not pushing myself at all, I'll probably fall to 10% of what needs to get done. In that kind of worldly logic, in that capitalist logic, in that logic. But from rested, there's even a welcoming of being moved by life. And the kind of intelligence there, as I said yesterday, we're moved to do that one thing that we realize, maybe as we're doing it or 10 years later, that it had even more good effects than the one we were trying to do. Yes. Missing what? Right? It's a process. And at first, we're not good at it. We haven't done it. Process, practice. So at first, we're practiced at dismissing that intelligence and kindness. It comes up. We could have made the phone call in that moment. We could have gone ahead to the post office in that moment. We could have whatever. But we dismiss it because we're so busy with our other list. And then we miss it. Yes. But that's part of the learning process. Like, oh, actually, now I see, if I would have gone to the post office at that moment, it would have been open and I could have done that thing. And when I did it, when I thought I should, it's closed today or whatever. So I found in the learning stage where we're still mostly dismissing the wise ideas and holding on to the stupid ideas, we get some feedback from life that's encouraging. I don't know if that's true for everyone, but I find that seems to happen. Because there's so many benefits from a single wise action, we wouldn't even want to be tracking it all. Does that make sense? Was that English okay? But to have some encouragement when we follow an intuition, like, oh, thank goodness. Because I came now, I met this old friend that I had been meaning to talk to. By chance. So yeah, we do miss things in the learning process. But it's also that we catch a few things, and otherwise we spend our whole lives on the wrong list. The list that at the end of our lives we'll regret we spent our whole lives with. And so we can reverse the assessment. Instead of checking how many things am I going to miss, we could check, what if I catch one or two things that are really from the heart today? And how does that go? How does that feel? And I think even one thing, it gives a lot. And it also helps us start to feel the difference between the things we think we should do and how that weighs on us and drags down, and the things that we would do if we could, if we were ourselves, if it were our life. Even thinking about maybe doing that is big. Or thinking about not doing that, if it's that kind of thing, is big. Like yesterday, we talked about the resistance and sabotage. So even to consider the possibility that someday I might sing, or someday I might, whatever it is, I might give myself a break. I might be comfortable in my body a little bit. That even that, like, I could consider that someday I might. That's big. It's kind of leaves room for the underground fresh water to start to, like, something shifts even in considering that someday I might just be okay, or know that I'm just okay already. There's a shift, and the underground water starts to go in the new cracks and come out of the old grooves, groovim. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What state of mind, how can I
do
something about it? Flows me.
Yeah. Yes, there were flies. So finding every way that helps. Oh, so the question was about agitation and equanimity in the yoga. There were flies, and it really got to him. So, is that a good summary? The main thing is the humbling of it, accepting that it's humbling, that these little tiny things can throw you that much, even though you don't want to be thrown. So it's humbling. That's a really good thing. At first it's not fun, but then it gets fun. Because we start to realize that it's not fun in the long run to be pumping up my spiritual ego. So what that would be like, I can deal with these flies or whatever. But I can't deal with these flies. It's humbling. And then it leaves room for the discovery about the eyes, the different eyes. Like, there's the part that's disturbed. And there's the part that can see, I'm not in control of this thing. And that's good, because we're not. And it's not about that kind of control. That something disturbs me, I don't like it, I'm going to make it stop. That's not spiritual practice. And we can see how that plays out. So it's good that you let it bother you and that you say that out loud, because usually shame would be the first thing that comes in. So to just realize it's a human situation, things bother us out of our control, beyond what we would wish. And also beyond, like, breaking our concept of who and what we are. And so if you can feel how that, just that is a good place. Let it break the concept of what and who you think you are. And I think there, then, like, kind of being broken rather than pumped up, like, but still wishing for equanimity, loving peace, not feeling it in the personal part of us, but something still loves that. I think in the humbling, the defenses are broken enough that there's some gaps for a new idea to come in the moment, because there's lots of ways you could play around with flies and the yoga and the agitation and the possibility of equanimity. So I can also report that having not happily and willingly, but having practiced many years with lots of flies, that today I notice there's flies, but it, and I'm not, it's not like as a better than, but like there's hope that there some days could just be flies and it's not a problem. So I remember the first time I practiced with flies in my 20s, there was a fly. And it, like, really actually went in my nose and everything, and I was doing it. But it was towards I was practicing a lot, and it was towards the end of a retreat, and the retreat had been going so well, and this fly came. And I still remember the intensity of the sensations and realizing the sensations themselves were not unpleasant. And so that's really cool and interesting with flies, for the most part. It can be quite intense and attention gathering, but it's usually not painful physically. And so we can feel, there be like this earthquake between the gap of the actual sensation and the thought of what's happening. It's a fly going up my nose. But the trick is without any should. And so if you can get the feeling of how it could even be fun to play around with, like, who moved my hand to get rid of that fly? Starting to feel what started that movement of, and what other movements can I feel in my body? And when it's a ripe time to play with feeling them, but also to bring a cloth with you to the hall, to the yoga, so that sometimes you can cover up and just turn off the fly channel for a while. Because it's not so helpful to just be like trying to deal with it. And I think in the humbling, you'll have some good ideas of ways to play with it. And I would suggest those would be better than any ideas that I've mentioned. But you can start with what I've said and get your momentum with it. So, especially not a should and the discovery of not being in control and still like a thread of a wish. And the probability that's built in that there could be equanimity, even though there isn't. Like, that's a really challenging place for us in the modern culture to stay. It's really a stretch. So, Okay. So finally, a sharing about the flies and playing with the sensations. And it was ticklish, was one word. And then she remembered that she realized she was covered in mango juice. And that became then too much. And she went to wash. So that there can be the many ways that happen. But along the way, learning, like, what we often might think is the outer situation is mostly how we take it. But how we take it is not in our control either. It's the inner landscape. Like the fact that you take it, like the ticklish sensation of flies, each one of us takes in differently at different times of day also, different energy levels. We filter that sensation differently. Mostly it would be filtered as yuck. Because that's our culture, and also, yeah, it's our culture, let's say. But to get to know what's my filter and what's the outer part of that sensation, filter, what's hard about it is the filter. But the filter is not something we can just turn off. We'll leave it as a koan. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.